All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
And good afternoon, world. This is not Jim. This is Dale Throneberry, and I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio on this last day of 2017. Happy New Year's to all of you. It's pretty cold here. Hopefully, it's a lot warmer wherever you are. But today's program is going to be made up of two stories that Jim Fossone recorded earlier this month. By the way, you can listen to all of Jim's podcasts by going to our website, veteransradio.net, and clicking on podcasts. On today's program, Jim will be interviewing USS Arizona survivor and Navy veteran Donald Stratton, and he's going to be talking about what happened on December 7th, 1941 on the USS Arizona when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Don is also going to be discussing his book, All the Gallant Men, the first memoir by a USS Arizona survivor. By the way, Don Stratton, I believe, is 94 years old. It's a really great interview. You don't want to miss it. And in the second part of the program, Jim is going to be talking with Steve Potter. Steve is the executive director of the Detroit chapter of Bunker Labs. And Bunker Labs is a national nonprofit organization for veteran entrepreneurs to inspire, educate, and connect veteran business owners. So I want to make sure that you stick around for the second half of the program, and they're going to be discussing the concept of Bunker Labs and what it is and how you can get involved in it. But before we get into today's program, we here at Veterans Radio want to thank all of you listeners and supporters. Without you, there would be no Veterans Radio. We want to thank WAAM for their continuing support with getting our stories out to you and giving Veterans Radio a home. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans, American House, and Calhoun Mortgage for helping us pay our bills. Tammy Bethune of BTG Solutions for building and keeping our website running smoothly, along with all the different social media platforms. And without our technical director in the control room, Derek Stone, we wouldn't be on the air. So I want to thank Derek very much. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get back to Veterans Radio right away. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today, Donald Stratton. Donald, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much.
Well, Donald is a U.S. Navy veteran from World War II. He has the distinct honor of having actually enlisted twice. We'll get to that a little bit. A lot of people will think you're crazy to enlist once, let alone twice, but we'll prove to them that you're not crazy. So,
right on.
Don is part of that greatest generation, but Don also wrote a book recently called All the Gallant Men, the first memoir by a USS Arizona survivor. And Don was on the USS Arizona the day that the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. So that's really what we're going to talk a little bit about. But before we do that, Don, I wanted to talk about where you came from. Tell us a little bit about Red Cloud, Nebraska.
Well, it's just a farming community, and it's down about 6 miles from the Kansas line, and I was born and raised there.
And one of the things I noted, and I really enjoyed reading the book, because you gave us a good sense, you and your co-author gave us a good sense of kind of what it was like to be in rural Nebraska in that early 1940s time period. It was a pretty tough life, wasn't it?
Well, it was a tough life all over about that time, but it was a little tough around there because there wasn't much activity going on, and times were hard, and that's the way it went.
You know, one of the things that I think crosses all the ages here in the United States of America is sort of why men and women go into the military. Tell us why you joined up back in the 1940s.
Well, that's another answer to the question right there. I mean, that's a few bucks coming in, and before that, nothing.
And I still think we see that today. I think every generation there's a time when men and women join the military. Sure, a little bit of it's adventure.
Yeah, they make more money now than they used to. Also,
that they do. Do you have any recollection of what you got paid back then?
Well, $21 a month to start out with. They graduated to 36 and 54.
And that was good money because they fed you as well. So let's talk about when you went into the Navy, what job duties were you to perform? What was your classification?
Well, there's not really any classification there. You're just a swabby, you know. If you're aboard ship, you swab decks, or if you're in the machinery part of it, well, you keep the engines running and keep the compartments cleaned up and whatever, you know. Then men sometimes go into dry dock and scrape and paint the sides of the ship, seawater fix it, a lot of rust and stuff.
Well, that's one of the things. I also served on ship, and one of the things I think the Navy guys out there will really relate to here on Veterans Radio is the amount of time you spent painting the decks and scrubbing the decks. When you joined the USS Arizona, where was it in port, and where was it headed?
Well, actually, I don't even remember. But,
I think I caught it
in Bremerton, Washington.
I think that's what I recalled from reading it, and the Arizona was heading to Pearl Harbor. I think that was the destination.
Well, we went to the right dock, and then we went to Pearl.
And tell us a little bit about that journey from Washington State down to Pearl Harbor.
Well, there's not much to tell. You're just aboard ship day and night and making mileage, whatever. It takes 5 days or 5 days and nights to get there.
And for those who haven't been on ship, Don, there's a real routine, a real rhythm to what time you get up, what time you eat, what time you're on watch. And that was pretty standard for you during that period, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Right. Everything was just like always a standard for everybody.
Well, one of the things I found very interesting about the book, and we're talking about All the Gallant Men, an American sailor's firsthand account of Pearl Harbor, which you wrote with a co-author, Ken Geyer.
Right.
Was talking about sort of the Hawaii of 1941. Certainly a lot different than what we either see today when we go there or see on TV. But tell us a little bit about your first impressions of Hawaii.
Well, that was just something that, oh boy, we're going to go to Hawaii. And, you know, everybody wanted to go to Hawaii at that time. So we board ship, we get to Hawaii. And, we just enjoyed it like everybody else would.
Well, it's an interesting because you give us an insight into sort of what R&R was back then, whether it was go to the beach, go hear bands play. Talk to us a little bit about what the sailor's life was at that point.
Well, it was not much. I mean, they had a lot of soldiers and sailors both there, and you go to the beach and you go to the bars, you go nice beaches on the opposite hotels there and stuff, whatever, and then just shopping around the town, whatever was going on. And
so you had a number of during a sea voyage, and particularly on a ship where, you know, everybody's you know, you're in pretty close quarters. You develop a lot of friends.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about some of your friends, Don.
Well, it's just, you're up on deck and you're holystoning the deck and you're scraping and painting the handrails. You're doing the deck, and if they go in the dry dock, while you're scraping the sides and painting, because the seawater has a lot of effect on steel as far as rust and crustaceans is our concern, so keep you busy.
Now, at that time, the USS Arizona had a band on it for the entertainment of the troops. Can you tell us a little bit about the Navy band?
Well, every ship had a band, and they sometimes when they're in Pearl for long enough, they'd have a competition, and bands from all the ships and the ratings and what, first and second, third, fourth place or whatever.
You know, it's really interesting because in the, let's see, what was it, in the 70s when I was on ship, the entertainment was you'd get, you know, big movie reels shipped to port and you'd show movies on the fantail. I'm not talking cable or videotapes. I'm talking the old big movie reels.
Yeah.
But back in the 40s, the entertainment for the guys really was that every ship had a band on it.
Oh yeah, and they had contests.
And did those guys also have pull regular duty, Don, during the course of?
Well, yes. I mean, and they're. They were assigned compartments, and they'd had to keep all that up, like the rest of the ship. And they had a few of the details, but the band had a little extra freedom as far as everything was concerned.
Well, I think, you know, life would have seemed pretty idyllic in Hawaii in December, late November, early December of 1941. But there were some signs that trouble was brewing. It seemed like there was some increased Japanese sub activity that was sighted. Was that something that the common sailor was aware of at that time?
Well, we didn't have anything to do about that. We knew something was in the wind, but we didn't have anything to, not much to do about it. But, you know, there was a little trouble. They sighted that sub off the harbor there, and then they had some planes off the North Shore and everything else, and the brass in the U.S. kind of ignored that, and that's why we got caught off flat-footed.
Well, one of the things that I was fascinated by in your first-hand account here was how some of the little details, in hindsight, it means something, but maybe the sailors didn't know it at the time. You tell a story about how the ship was practicing, the guys, including yourself, I believe, were sort of practicing for a football game that was gonna happen in early December, maybe December 1st. But all of a sudden, the game got canceled, or the practices got canceled.
Well, see, that would come up from the big brass. I mean, they knew something was in the wind, and they were curbing a few of the things, but when it come right down to the real facts of the submarine and off the harbor and the planes on the North Shore and everything else, they kind of slipped their mind. They didn't pay much attention to that.
Yeah, I read that canceling of the football practice and games kind of that same way, that somebody must have been thinking something's up, and to get the guys, you know, more focused maybe on their duties and less on the recreation. But again, when you're down on the basic sailor level, you know you don't have the information.
You don't get much down there, but they did have some of the things that kind of made you think, well, something's in the wind, but we don't know what it is.
Well, let's turn to December 7th, 1941. I mentioned earlier that when you're on ship, there's very much routine. So you were very much in that routine that fateful morning. You woke up at 5 a.m. And went about the sort of normal daily breakfast chores that
the routine, yeah.
You've been assigned. We should also tell our listeners here on Veterans Radio that the Arizona had about I believe, 1,511 men on it on December 7th, 1941, and that there were 185 ships moored in the harbor. So history records tell us, Don, that the bombing of the harbor started about 8 a.m., and it lasted till about 10 a.m. Can you walk us through how that horrific morning went for you? What your first impressions were?
Well, that just, we got hit kind of unexpectedly, and there was a lot of ships in the harbor. There was a lot of destroyers anchored in there, a lot of cruisers anchored in there, a lot of battleships anchored in there, and they just, like the Jap attacked, just kind of didn't know what was going on until everything broke loose and started. So,
Don, when it started, were you below decks or up on deck?
I just don't even remember. All I know is they sounded general quarters, and I went to my general quarters station.
And tell us what your general quarters station was.
Well, I was a sight setter and the port director for the 5-inch anti-aircraft guns.
And during that attack, as you outlined in the book, the Japanese torpedo planes flew so low that the anti-aircraft guns were of no use, if I understood it right.
Well, you can't train the guns down that far at sea level, only at a distance could you do that. So they come in pretty close, and anti-aircraft guns, you have to train them clear down to the near the surface of the water to get the torpedo planes and stuff coming in. So,
and would have also been worried about shooting other American ships at that kind of angle, I suppose.
Well, in that harbor, the distance is where the projectile is going to end up is kind of unknown, you know.
So
if you're firing it in the sky, it travels and dispenses itself and drops in the ocean or whatever. But if you're firing in the harbor like that, you're liable to hit anything in its range in the harbor, buildings and whatever, and their bases and whatever.
And Don, the torpedo planes did significant damage to some of the ships.
Well, they had to rig them different. Torpedoes travel underwater more deeper than the harbor there, and so they rigged them with wooden fins, and so they stay on the surface more or less.
The USS Arizona, which is famous because it is still in the harbor, sunken, and the memorial is there that we've all seen somewhere, either live or in pictures. The most significant damage to the USS Arizona, though, was from some other ordnance. Can you talk to us about the bomb that really was the end of the USS Arizona?
Well, it's just a bomb that hit in the magazine area and exploded all the magazines and, of course, fuel lines and whatever, and it just blew the ship apart.
So, you know, it was a strike that hit where all the munitions were stored in the Arizona.
Well, it just happened to be that they hit in the right place, that where the fuel well and the gasoline for the airplanes and the ammunition and everything else was all in the area, and it all blew up.
Veteran radio listeners, I'm going to read a few sentences from Don's book, All the Gallant Men, talking about this attack. And in his words, the beating we took was brutal. I observed the Tennessee and the West Virginia take hits. I witnessed the Oklahoma lurch to one side and then roll over and capsize. I saw a fireball in the dry dock where the Pennsylvania was. And the noise, it was deafening.
Oh, yes.
Terrible. This is the definition of all hell breaking loose, isn't it?
Well, it's just, there's so much going on. Every place around you, something's happened on the left side, something's happened. On the right side, something's happened across the area, the dry, dark area, and something's... you got noises, you got explosions, you got everything blowing up, you got planes flying over, dropping bombs and torpedoes and whatever.
It became obvious that the Arizona wasn't going to survive, and you had to get off the ship. Quite an amazing rescue for a few of you men to be able to get off the ship. Can you talk to us a little bit about the Vestal and Joe George and how that rescue happened?
We were just kind of stranded up on the foremost on the sky control platform, and the number two director, and after the ship blew up and the fireballs all over and everything going on, and we got attention to somebody on the vessel, and they got around and got a heaving line and with a small line with a monkey's fist on it and to hold it with a weight, and threw it across to our ship, and we took it and pulled it across. They hooked on a heavier line, we pulled it across and tied it on our ship, and then we proceeded to go hand over hand across that line for about 70 feet.
And how many men were able to make it across?
I think there were six of us went across the line.
And listen,
there's only two of us alive today.
Listeners, you should know that the sailor on the Vestal who threw that monkey fist over to hook the line, and it took three tries, a gentleman by the name of Joe George.
Yeah.
We just got him
a medal like a couple months ago.
Without that action, these men would not have survived. He actually did
December
this.
December the 7th, we've been trying to get that medal for a long time.
Well, I'm glad he's been recognized, because he did this really in contravention of his commander's orders, which was cut us loose.
Get the vessel away
from the Arizona.
The vessel was trying to get underway, yes.
I think it is those stories of heroic actions by men like Joe George, who history has lost, that makes your book so important, Don.
Thank you.
The firsthand accounts, the things that were going on, even your recounting of some of the lucky things that happened that day, such as, you know, three aircraft carriers were out in sea maneuvers, so the air power wasn't completely wiped out. The Japanese didn't strike the numerous storage oil tanks in the area, so there was a fuel supply. The repair facilities survived on shore. Some amazing things, really.
Well, that's not all the story, I don't think, but the aircraft were out at sea, and they have been bombed there, but otherwise, you never know what will happen, and they had so many planes coming in, and if some of the ships like the Arizona or in the Pennsylvania or any other ships in New Jersey or whatever, if they'd have been where they could have got underway and got out to sea, we might have lost them too, you know?
Absolutely.
Because they're underway out at sea where they're a little better target, I guess, probably, or something. But
so I want to recount a few facts here, Don. I'm not going to ask you to comment here, but I want our listeners just to know that you suffered burns over about 65% of your body. You recount in the book long, painful recovery from that burn process. You were finally medically discharged in September of 1942. And again, this is one of these things that I think resonates across the decades when men get discharged. You know, you get discharged and all of a sudden you find, man, you are out. And you end up hitchhiking back home to Red Cloud, Nebraska. But a couple of years later, I think in February of 1944, after being home for, you know, less than 2 years, you re-enlist in the Navy. And if that's not significant enough, you get assigned to the USS Stack, a destroyer, and spend time in some of the most famous battles in the Pacific, including the invasion of Okinawa.
Right.
So you essentially were in the first battle and the last battle, naval battle of World War II.
Well, I just kind of say, at the time people ask me, I say, well, I was there when it started and I was there when it ended.
Well, Don, I want to thank you for taking some time to talk to us here on Veterans Radio. We like telling the stories of our veterans. You know, it's a lot of ordinary men and women who do extraordinary things. And I can recommend All the Gallant Men by Donald Stratton to our listeners. It's out now in William Morrow paperback, reprinted here in November of 2017. It's a great read. If you've got anybody in the family who's been in the Navy or been in World War II, they'll want to read this book because they're going to read it. And I don't care when you're in the Navy, you're going to read this and go, yep, that's no different today. So there are some real commonalities. You did a great job here, Don, and I really appreciate you sharing it with us.
Well, I've had a lot of people, not a lot of people, but quite a few people call me and say, everybody ought to be required to read this book.
I would agree.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. This is Dale Thronberry, just kind of filling in a little time for you. Coming up next is Jim Falzone's interview with Steve Potter. Steve is the executive director of the Detroit chapter of Bunker Labs. And Bunker Labs is a national nonprofit for veteran entrepreneurs to inspire, educate, and connect veteran business owners. So now we're going to go to Jim's interview that was recorded earlier this month. Now we've got Jim Falzone with Steve Potter.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today, Stephen Potter. Steve, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be on this podcast again. Thank
you
for having me.
I think it was about 2015 when we had you on. You were actually, I think, in Liberia at the time that we spoke, and you were telling us about Operation Onward Liberty in Liberia, Africa. For our listeners, I should tell you that Stephen Potter is a colonel in the Michigan Army National Guard. He's had a number of assignments and tours of duty. He's been the commander of the 177th Military Police Brigade. He's done tours in various state affiliated positions. We're over in Latvia for a while. And as I said, we talked to you when you were in Liberia telling us about that duty. Why don't you catch us up a little bit? What are you doing currently in your military career?
Actually, I have recently transitioned to the U.S. Army Reserves, and I am the Emergency Preparedness Liaison Officer for the state of Michigan, which is each state has one single full colonel who is an advisor to the state police and the state director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management for any incident, large-scale incident that would require federal military response. So this position advises and helps a team from our FEMA region, which is in Chicago, coordinate that. So these would be, you know, very large-scale disasters similar to Hurricane Maria that you just saw in Puerto Rico, Hurricane Katrina, or other large-scale disasters. So that's a recent move for me. I spent 2016 and 17 as the chief of staff for the 46th Military Police Command. And we had a similar mission during that time where we were preparing for a domestic response mission.
Well, as I mentioned, Stephen's got a very interesting military career and background, and we could spend our time talking about that. But I told him at the outset what I really wanted to have him on for is to talk about a volunteer effort that he's engaged in. Steve is the executive director of Bunker Lab here in Detroit, Michigan. Steve, why don't you tell us what Bunker Labs is all about?
So Bunker Labs is a national not-for-profit corporation located in Chicago, Illinois, with chapters all around the country, ranging from Austin, Texas, to Washington, D.C., and everywhere in between, including Seattle, some locations in California. The organization creates a chapter locally in a city that has a thriving entrepreneurial culture, and the intent for the Bunker Labs is to bring veterans into the fold in the entrepreneurship community. So where veterans might not necessarily have sort of a flag or a rallying call, Bunker Labs serves as that organization. We all know that veterans like to be around veterans. We have a common frame of reference, common experiences. So what Bunker Labs does is brings veterans together and then recruits other leadership within the entrepreneurial community to start making those introductions and breaking down any barriers that might exist for the veteran to tap into other resources in the community.
Well, we've on Veterans Radio have often spoken to veterans who are business owners and entrepreneurs and recognize a certain commonality, certain traits and things that you learn when you're in the military that translate taking the risk of being a business owner. And I know, Steve, you similarly have had those experiences as a business owner and an entrepreneur. What attracted you to volunteer for Bunker Labs?
I think the first thing was my experience in being an entrepreneur and having some success early on as an entrepreneur and some of the challenges I faced in finding the right person to talk to or finding a mentor or really understanding some of the nuts and bolts about some of the business topics. So I felt, and I actually had, when I was an entrepreneur, a couple young veterans that had come to me and asked me for personal mentorship and training and coaching. And I felt if me as a single entrepreneur had two pretty random people come to me and ask for assistance, there must be a market need for this and there must be a demand. So this kind of combines my passion for serving veterans and helping veterans with my interest in entrepreneurship as a post-service career opportunity for veterans.
Well, and one of the things I've been reading about Bunker Labs now for a couple of years, it started in June of 2014, I believe in Chicago, and as you mentioned, it now has chapters in Texas and Tennessee and Missouri and North Carolina and Florida and Wisconsin and Ohio and Minnesota. What's interesting here is that it's really gained some national momentum, but each chapter has a sort of a local flavor to it. So tell us how that works.
Well, I mean, I have to give a shout out to Todd Connor, who's the CEO of Bunker Labs. I mean, he is a really top-notch leader. He's a Navy veteran himself, a very strategic thinker. What he does is he recruits chapter leaders, and Bunker Labs provides a framework, but it's really on the local entrepreneur and the chapter leadership to, put that local flavor like you mentioned. So, while there's standard programming, that we follow, and we'll get into that, I'm sure you're interested in that, but, how we integrate into the Detroit and Southeast Michigan entrepreneurial system is really on us, right? So in being a new chapter, we're certainly still getting our feet wet and trying to, one, figure out where all the entrepreneurs are and what type of valuable programming and networking events that we can provide. So it's really up to that chapter leader to integrate that that chapter into the local ecosystem and make it valuable based on the specific geography. Some cities may have industries that are prevalent, like Houston you might see a lot of oil and gas and energy, whereas San Francisco might have more high-tech startups. Detroit will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see, because we kind of have at a minimum right up front, we have a cross section, everything from a woman who has started a recycling company to a gentleman that has sort of a high risk consultancy and an executive protection business. So it's going to be interesting to see whether it's maybe automotive or mobility startups start to come in to the Bunker Labs and start to sort of flourish there.
So let's talk about those that framework, that national framework to inspire, educate, and connect. How does that national framework come into a local chapter?
So every chapter is gauged on its success based on building from the core foundation, which is the Bunker Brew. So honestly, the leadership in Chicago says that the first thing and the only thing you do within the first year is have a really thriving Bunker Brews, where you get the veteran community together with the rest of the entrepreneur and business community. That's considered a success. So the monthly Bunker Brews is really a meetup. I mean, we did one last night. It lasted from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. and it was really a networking event. And we had some folks from some of the venture capital and investors and folks from GM's entrepreneurial arm that are doing innovation with GM came over from the Renaissance Center. So it was really a great networking event. So we do those monthly. Brews might be a coffee brew, might be an afternoon, evening, having beer and cocktails or something like that. So it's really, it's on us as a chapter to program that. Within the first year in Detroit, we are going to be conducting, actually in January, something called Launch Lab Online, which is available to any entrepreneur across the country and even internationally, because it's all done online. And that is a self-paced entrepreneurial course that anyone can take, whether they're a veteran, a current serving military person, a spouse, to really explore entrepreneurship under some pretty well-established programming guidelines. And it's self-paced, it's online, and it really gives that person the chance to sort of understand a little bit better what that's about. Within the first year in Detroit, partially because we took on some additional grant funding from a foundation, we are going to be doing an in-residence launch lab, which is a 12-week, almost like a boot camp. We're going to be doing that in the evening so as to be able to attract folks who have a full-time job and an entrepreneurial ambition. And that will occur in the spring, probably somewhere around May through August. And then we are going to have a muster, which is a full one-day event where we sort of celebrate that cohort that graduates the Launch Lab and bring everybody together to celebrate veteran entrepreneurship in Detroit. The final piece of programming is a CEO circle, which we will likely implement in 2019, and that's really an affinity group where veteran entrepreneurs, CEOs come together and sort of help each other problem solve some of the more difficult business challenges they're facing.
Well, I think you have given us a great outline of what we can look forward to here, and it's really exciting. I think one of the things it offers for veteran entrepreneurs is Bunker Labs has really become, in 3 short years, sort of the primary brand for this sort of entrepreneurial networking and training. And it allows you then at every chapter level to really draw people in because, you know, it's the real deal. It's not some one guy's crazy idea. It's really got national traction. I think that makes the brand pretty dang interesting.
Yes, I would agree. And every chapter has really solid leadership. Some chapters have taken off sort of faster and bigger than others. I know our chapter in Nashville is doing some pretty significant growth to where they're going to be expanding to other cities within Tennessee. I mean, that would be great for Michigan just based on the geography. In the future, if we were able to sort of expand Bunker from just Detroit into potentially, you know, Lansing, Grand Rapids, Battle Creek, even Northern Michigan, in Marquette, which has a pretty thriving entrepreneurial community. So, yeah, the brand's strong. The leadership is really solid, both at the national and chapter level. And we're just excited to be launching this and getting this off the ground in Detroit.
Can you talk, Steve, a little bit about the national partners who are helping finance Bunker Labs, at least at a national level? I don't know how it trickles down to the chapters, but as I say, this brand has gotten a lot of national support from significant players.
Sure. So, where do I start? We really have Bunker Labs has tremendous support from a variety of sources. The Ford Family Fund, J.P. Morgan Chase, Comcast, the Kauffman Foundation have all been foundational national supporters. WeWork, which is a co-working space that's recently set up in Detroit and is expanding rapidly throughout the country, has partnered with us nationally to provide office space for veterans to within the Bunker construct have some primary office space, shared workspace, as well as provided some grant funding for Bunker Labs to scale. Locally in Detroit, I want to just highlight Comcast, the New Economy Initiative, and Ford, who have all provided us grant funding to launch the chapter in Detroit and get a good foundation started out for the chapter. So that's just how success works with a not-for-profit. I mean, you need committed funders and supporters, and Bunker Labs has been successful at cultivating those relationships.
Well, and I think one of the things it does, and I hope our veteran radio listeners who are listening here to Stephen Potter, Executive Director of Bunker Labs Detroit, you'll recognize these funding sources, and implicitly it tells you that there's a degree of quality and professionalism involved in Bunker Labs, because these guys wouldn't fund it otherwise, and therefore you shouldn't hesitate to reach out to Bunker Labs and see if there's a way for you to connect or get involved. Steve, I know there's another chapter leader, I believe, here in Detroit, up on the website, Tom Tapinski. Can you tell us a little bit of what Tom's role is?
Sure. Thomas Tapinski, he goes by TJ, is a co-leader of mine within the Detroit chapter. He joined at the launch event. So Todd Connor and I sat down with him, and he was running a digital marketing business out of WeWork, Detroit's location. And he said, "Hey, I want to help build this chapter." And we said, "We'd love to help, you know, have you help us." And Thomas is a former Army, sergeant in the communication field. So, and he is very, very solid in some of the social media technologies, and he's a digital marketing consultant himself with a very thriving business. So, so it's great to have him as a partner. One person can't do and be successful at this alone. We're actually funded from the Ford Foundation. Is funded the Detroit chapter with 2 6-month internships as well. So we'll be having our first paid intern come on in February. And they're going to help us with developing some of the more detailed programming that's going to occur in 2018. But I'm just very grateful to have TJ on board with me, and working together to get this thing launched.
So tell us a little bit about how people find out some more of what's going on at Bunker Labs Detroit.
So the best way for folks in Detroit or Southeast Michigan or Michigan as a whole is to visit the website. And if you click on the our locations and go to the Detroit page, there's a place you can sign up to be kept aware. So if someone comes in there and signs up for that, we get their contact information. We can add their information to our outbound marketing information list so that we can send, we do a monthly newsletter. The second way is we have a Facebook page, Bunker Labs Detroit, on Facebook. That's obviously we post all the information about the upcoming events and programming and everything. Bunker Labs Detroit is also on Instagram and Twitter. And then I'll just give my email address, and it's Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, dot Potter, P-O-T-T-E-R, at bunkerlabs.org. I would just offer anybody that's interested in, on your listener base, Jim, that's interested in supporting Bunker Labs, taking advantage of programming, coming out, meeting veterans, in whatever capacity, please reach out and we will get them plugged in.
Steve, do you have a sense of how many veterans are involved at maybe at the national level and then more locally? I know it's brand new locally, but give us a sense of the reach nationally and then locally.
Yeah, I don't have current numbers for the national sort of involvement. I can certainly provide that to you if you want to provide an update. I can tell you from the first two events, so we did a chapter launch and then one bunker bruise, we've had between 60 and 70 veterans reach out, be part of the events, or take advantage of the networking that we're providing. And that's within 45 days.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear if you extrapolate that out and you look at the number of chapters. You know, there are thousands and thousands of veterans who are participating with Bunker Labs across the nation to aid them in their entrepreneurial trek. And I bring this up because we've talked to veterans before as they've launched their businesses, and a lot of times, you know, it's, hey, what held you back? And what you hear is, well, I didn't really know what I was doing. I knew what I was passionate about, but, you know, who was I to think that I could really launch a business? So anybody listening who's got that passion, they know what they want to do, don't hold yourself back. Reach out and get involved, because there's a lot of folks who'll help you feel more comfortable taking the leap off the cliff. And I think that's part of what you're doing, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, I would absolutely say that the value of the connections that we're building within Bunker Labs has been one of the most beneficial things. So when someone reaches out and joins in, whether they just want to keep informed about the Bunker Labs, they're joining the network. We call it a tribe. So they're joining the tribe of veterans in Michigan that want to be entrepreneurs, and they're going to get a support network that's going to help help them figure things out from the get-go.
And I would think, Steve, that a big percentage of your folks who came out to your first couple events are post 9/11 vets, but maybe I'm wrong on that. What's your demographics look like?
Definitely a strong showing from post 9/11 veterans, but we have I mean, just last night we had a Vietnam-era veteran who runs a donut shop in Detroit called Dilla's Delights, who is part of the Bunker crew now and taking advantage of some of our networking and access to capital that showed up to our event last night. There was a couple Gulf War-era veterans that were there as well. So, you know, I think we're going to certainly cross the spectrum of all different eras of service as we work with these organizations.
And I suspect the same is true for both male and female veterans, that you see business owners and entrepreneurs, both men and women, interested in learning more and becoming more involved and getting involved with Bunker Labs.
Sure. Yeah, I think the military is very diverse, whether female or different races or different religions or whatever. I mean, that's one of the benefits and exciting things about being in the military is the diversity we have. And I would say just, Bunker Labs is cutting into that veteran group that provides the same sort of diversity. And we've seen that right from the start of Bunker Labs. So we have male, female entrepreneurs, older folks, younger folks, all different races, colors. I mean, it's great, right? Because we all trust each other. We've all been veterans. We all know we're going to commit to helping each other.
Well, and I'm really thrilled that there's a local chapter now. As I said, I've been watching it across the country. I've talked to some of the members before on these interviews. I think it's, veterans in particular have a certain skill set that makes them good entrepreneurs. So this is great work that you're volunteering and doing here, Stephen Potter. Why don't you give our listeners kind of one last piece of advice before we close out our interview?
Yeah, I would just provide them a call to action. We provided the information earlier. You allowed me to provide them the website. I gave my email. So we would love to take advantage of your listenership and have some of them, if not most of them, reach out to Bunker Labs, join in our community, come out to some events, see some of the veteran entrepreneurs that are building businesses in Southeast Michigan, and connect with us. Keep those veteran bonds close and continuing.
Well, we want to encourage everybody to go to bunkerlabs.org and check it out. I think you'll really be impressed with what's going on locally and nationally, and hopefully there's a place for you to fit in as well. Thanks, Steve, for participating on today's Veterans Radio podcast.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, we're back here on Veterans Radio. This is Dale Thronberry, kind of wrapping up our New Year's Eve program. You listened to Jim Fausone with his interview with Navy veteran Donald Stratton, and you can get Donald's book. It's entitled All the Gallant Men, the First Memoir by a USS Arizona Survivor, through our website, or you can go to Amazon.com. to find out more information about it. It's available in all the different formats. Evidently, I was just looking at it. It's available in Kindle, and it's also available as a CD, or if you have audible.com, you can also download the book there. It's read by someone else, unfortunately, not Don himself. The other second thing that you just finished listening to, which I found really interesting, was the Bunker Labs, which is bunkerlabs.org, which is designed to help veterans get their businesses off the ground and get them started, give them advice, help them find funding, and so forth. And, of course, Bunker Labs is got a number of different chapters all over the country. So I strongly encourage all of you out there that are interested in starting a business, check these guys out. I think it's going to be very interesting. I think you'll find it very helpful to you. That's bunkerlabs.org. I know we're going to check it out because we've been trying to run a business for 14 years, and maybe somebody can show us how we can actually make some money at it. So I think I'll be checking out one of their monthly meetings. The other reminder is I want to thank everybody for supporting Veterans Radio over the years, and especially those people here at WAAM. We certainly couldn't do it without it. And again, thanks, Derek, for keeping us on the air. We'll be back next week with a live program. Bob Gould and I will be featuring our good friend and our frequent guest, Dr. Rebecca Grant. She's going to be discussing what to look for in 2018 regarding America's military. And I just want to tell you real quick about Dr. Grant. Rebecca Grant is the president of the IRIS Independent Research Corporation as a public policy record. She's got a PhD in international relations from London School of Economics. She writes for the Air Force magazine. This woman knows what she's talking about. So we're going to be talking about the military in 2018. We're also going to be talking, obviously, about some of the political issues that might be going on around the world, and maybe some of the financial issues that are going to be going on around the world in the next 12 months. So please, until then, you are dismissed.